So chapter 8 summary, I'll try to be very good with time. This is a lot of things to finish in 1 hour. So chapter 8, text 1 to 16 is Krishna's again saving his devotees. So as we discussed, you know, the most intimate pastimes that we can ever experience in the Bhagavatam before the 10th canto are happening over there. Different qualities of Krishna, this reciprocation with the surrender of his devotees is happening here. Text 17 to 36, Kunti Devi begins to offer prayers. Text 37 to 43, she concludes by expressing her fear and within that, what is her actual desire. And then text 44 to 52, Krishna accepts Kunti Dev's prayers and hears the distressed words of Yudhishthir Maharaj. So chapter 7 and chapter 8, we've had many, like all of our devotees have given very nice and wonderful presentations, and we've also had devotees from other places who have been visiting and then they also spoke. So we've got a lot of nectar. I'll just try to breeze through it. Won't be able to cover everything that all the speakers said, but I'll just try to breeze through it quickly because this is a summary. So Krishna again saves his devotees. So like different ways in which he is saving. So the Pandavas are offering water to their dead relatives, and then they are grieving when, you know, after they've done their duties, Krishna is with them. Now if I'm in such a powerful position, I'll feel, okay, I have responsibilities to take care of this water business. They can do. It's okay, it's a small thing. They're not expecting me to be there anyway. It's a small thing, you know. Why should I help these? It's okay. I already helped so much. I helped them fight the war. I was the chariot driver. I did this, I did that. Okay, you know, enough. I've done. Now I need to get back to my stuff. But Krishna is over there. He's over there. So personal with his devotees. So personal with his surrendered devotees. You know, he's there with them. I mean, Krishna is with us also. But he's personally over there with them. Helping them to go and, you know, offer water to the dead. He's there with them to grieve with them. It may seem like, what is this they are doing? These are material things. And as an aspiring devotee, I may feel like that about other people whom I'm, you know, whom I'm friends with or whom I'm trying to serve in some capacity. So I may feel like that, but Krishna is over there with them. And then he allows them to grieve, he allows them to do. And then, you know, the Krishna and the Munis pacify them by citing the stringent laws of material nature and the karma thereof, that because of which these things happen. So we just have to tolerate, we have to accept. And as much as there is acceptance, as much as there is peace and happiness in our life. So Srila Prabhupada's purport states in the fourth verse states that by the association of these sadhus, you know, the clearance of the misgivings of material existence at once takes place by association with the Lord's devotees, who are able to inject the transcendental sound into the depths of the bewildered heart and thus make one practically liberated from all lamentation and illusion. That is a summary of the pacifying measures for those affected by the reaction of stringent material laws exhibited in the forms of birth, death, old age and disease, which are insoluble factors of material existence. We cannot do anything. We have to deal with it. We have to tolerate it. We have to go through it. So what is the point in trying to fight it? You know, you're going to get bewildered. We are going to get disturbed in our mind. So, but to be situated in that status where we are able to tolerate, we need the association of devotees. And association of devotees also is about physical association with devotees, where we are seeing them on a regular basis. You know, just by seeing Shyamala Mataji chant on the bus, I used to feel read Bhagavatam on the bus, I used to feel a lot of inspiration. And so many things, you know, each devotee is so inspiring. Just seeing some devotee, we get inspired by the qualities that they carry, and it inspires us to follow those qualities. Because every devotee, I mean, there are many qualities that all devotees have, but at least one quality prominently, by my limited vision, I will be able to see in some devotee. And by seeing that devotee, I get inspired to follow those qualities, or by seeing them in action. So that is one thing. And then another thing is to have close friendships, where there is sharing of the heart, there is opening of the heart, where the devotees in that association, our peers, can tell us, you know, come on, fix yourself. Move on, let's move on. You know, they'll hold our hand when we are grieving, but they'll also help us move on. You know, just finally, like when we are done grieving, they'll show us, okay, now, you know, let's clear the misgivings in your heart. You know, focus on your service. Focus on your service to all the devotees who have, you know, in continuation of pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So we need the association of devotees very, very strongly, and also to advance in our spiritual practices, to perform our sadhana bhakti. So, see, and Lord Krishna is so personally present over there. So that's a lesson for us, that is actually devotional service. Devotional service, okay, we have our fixed services, primary service, secondary service, we have all those things, but to be personally present with devotees and to serve them, even if it is teaching someone's child or picking someone's children up from school or, you know, just helping them in their program, whatever, that service is important, that is being personal. Otherwise, otherwise the tendency to be impersonal because of our false ego is always there. And then the next thing Lord Shri Krishna does is that he performs three well-performed Ashwamedh Yajnas so that Maharaj Yudhishthir's, his kingdom and his kingship is more glorified and more auspicious. And because so many people have been killed and there are so many other inimical kings, you know, the sons and grandsons of the kings who have been killed are still there, right? They're inimical. So this also helps them, bring auspiciousness in Maharaj Yudhishthir's kingdom. And after this, the Lord is preparing for his departure. So it seems like a lot of time has passed between Ashwatthama being released and all these things have happened. And while he is preparing to depart, look at Ashwatthama, he is not satisfied, does not understand, does not learn his lesson. As soon as Lord Krishna is, you know, seating himself on the chariot, he sees Uttara is running to him in fear. Other people cannot understand why she is running because nobody can see the Brahmastra, only she can see because it was directed to her. The Brahmastra will not harm other people, it will just harm the go to the intended person. And, you know, she is running himself in fear. And she's crying to the Lord for protection. And she's saying, you know, oh Lord of the Lords, Lord of the universe, you are the greatest of mystics. Please protect me. For there is no one else who can save me from the clutches of death in this world of duality. So in that situation, she knows she's powerless. She knows the ability of her family members is not going to save her. Only Krishna can save her. Only Krishna can save her. Why? Because there is no one else here who can protect them from the clutches of death, because death and duality are in Krishna's control. He is the only one and he is Bhaktavatsal. He will protect. That confidence is there in the devotee that Krishna will protect me. What is that? Avashya Rakshibo Krishna. Krishna will always take care of me. And then she says, look at the exalted nature, that Krishna, if you have desired that this Brahmastra has to come on me, then if you so desire, please let it kill me. But as a mother, my responsibility is, you know, mothers when they are pregnant are very, very careful with what they are eating, how they are walking, how they are taking care of their health, you know, what places they go to, what places they don't go to, what places they subject their body to, what they don't do. So it is their responsibility to protect the child in the womb. So she says that if you so desire, I am surrendered to you, let it kill me, but please protect my embryo. Please don't burn, allow this to be burned, because please help me fulfill this responsibility. And Sridhar Swami says here that apart from Krishna, there is no one devoid of any fear, because fear personified is fearful of Krishna. So only Krishna can save. And again, you know, the same lesson, and just like Arjuna, you know, how, and just like Draupadi, when she's like, hey Govinda, when she's being insulted, how many times are we able to do this? And if we repeatedly hear these different pastimes that, you know, Vyasadeva has meditated upon and written for us, we will be able to imbibe those qualities. Just by the potency of these devotees, we will be able to imbibe these qualities and try to practice in our life one step at a time. So that is another inspiration for us. And then the Lord understands that Ashwatthama has released this Brahmastra. And the Lord immediately takes up his Sudarshan Chakra. Now, two Brahmastras have been released by Ashwatthama. One towards the Pandavas and one towards Uttara. Because he wants to kill any possibility of the dynasty continuing. So, as soon as he releases the Brahmastra towards the Pandavas can see, and then they are immediately ready with their weapons. And as soon as Uttara sees the Brahmastra coming to her, she is running towards Krishna for protection. So, now the Lord immediately takes up his Sudarshan Chakra. Again, you know, in the Govardhan Hill pastime we just read, he's saying, you know, it is my vow to protect the devotees. After all, they are completely taken my shelter. So, it is my job to protect them. It's my duty. So, Krishna is so responsible in his reciprocation. And then he's saying that, like there's in text 13, the word is there, Ananya Vishayatmanam. The Pandavas, Ananya, they were 100% dependent upon the protection of the Lord, although they were all great warriors themselves. But the Lord neglects even the greatest warriors and also vanquishes him in no time. So the Pandavas know this ability is coming from Krishna, it can be vanquished any time. So Krishna is more powerful than the greatest warriors themselves. And when the Lord saw that there was no time for the Pandavas to counteract, right, it's happening very quickly. It's like it's a meant like very quickly, just like how fast we have thoughts, you know, that fast the Brahmastras are flowing here. And when the Lord saw there is no time for the Pandavas to counteract the Brahmastra of Ashwatthama, he takes up his weapon even at the risk of breaking his vow. So, we may say Mahabharata is over, what is going on? But no, the vow still holds true. So he gets the Sudarshan disc and he uses that disc to protect the Pandavas, counteract the Brahmastra that is coming to the Pandavas. And for Uttara, for the womb, in the child in the womb, he covers the womb with his own internal potency. And then there is this very nice picture of Parikshit Maharaj getting darshan of the Lord in that situation. So, Krishna is not only there as a chariot driver, not only there to guide the Pandavas during the different difficult situations, but he's not only there in the when they're paying obeisance to their deceased, not only there to, you know, be with them and in those times, but he's also again and again protecting them repeatedly. I mean, we have a very wonderful Lord and a wonderful Master. So inspiring. All these things are so attractive to take shelter of the Lord, because I am fearful of so many different things. But if I know that my wonderful Master will take care of me, so beg for your mercy that I can gradually do that. If you all bless me, I can do it fast also. But I know because of my conditioning, it will happen slowly. So I beg for your blessings that I can do that in my life. And then, so we heard this pastime. Now, what are the different lessons? What not to do? We learned what to do from Arjuna and Draupadi. Now, what not to do from, we are learning from Ashwatthama. He's teaching us by his example. So, Dronacharya's son. He was Dronacharya's son. He was a son of the teacher of Arjuna. And Arjuna became the greatest archer under Dronacharya. And he was his son. Imagine what access he has to Dronacharya. He doesn't have to go through all the, you know, the protocols also. Dronacharya is always accessible to him. He is Dronacharya's son, but he is still not expert in the religious principles and archery. Right? He does not know how to, you know, get the Brahmastra back. And then he is killing Draupadi's sons in sleep, not following religious principles. Don't do all those things, right? So, I was just thinking that I may remain in the movement, always in this glorious, you know, movement of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and all the wonderful exalted Vaishnavas who are pushing forward Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement, accessing his potency and pushing it forward. I may remain in the movement for years. I may say I'm in the movement for 15 years now, 20 years, 25 years. But if I'm not receiving the mercy that is available, if I'm not applying it in my life, and if I do not receive it, I will remain like Ashwatthama. I will remain like a Dvija Bandhu. So the impetus needs to be there for me to take the mercy, to be in that receiving mode. Ashwatthama probably did not receive all those things from Dronacharya. Otherwise, why he would not receive and why Arjuna and the others received? So, that is important. And also, I felt that Ashwatthama, in that difficult situation when his horses got tired, Krishna was there, no? He could see Krishna at the back. If he is, you know, Arjuna's chariot is following him and his chariot is running forward, he knows Krishna is a chariot driver and everything, but because of offenses, he does not have the true understanding of who Krishna is, because he is committing offenses. He was on the other side, then he has killed the sons of the most beloved devotees of the Lord. That's an offense. Because he has committed so many offenses, he cannot take shelter. So if I commit offenses to devotees, it's difficult for me to take, because of my false ego, it will be difficult for me to take their shelter. So it will be difficult for us. So, unlike Arjuna, who was always surrendered to the Lord, did everything under the guidance of the Lord, his life was guided. He took shelter of the Lord. So, he had no difficulty in taking shelter of the Lord because he had that relationship with the Lord of surrender. Ashwatthama did not have that. And then he does not pacify his burning, misplaced anger even after so many years, right? We heard they did all that. Then they went to the Ganges, they offered the water to the deceased relatives. Then they did three Ashwamedh Yajnas, and then Krishna is departing. I mean, a lot of time passed in that much time, right? But Ashwatthama he did not learn his lesson. He's angry because he was humiliated. He's angry because his father was killed. He's angry because of this, so many things. And he's not set some time aside, thought about it, you know, like, okay, this is wrong. Unlike Draupadi, he is not able to follow anything properly. So, I can also remain consumed in the fire of anger and envy for years. What is the use? Is it going to help me do my service to the Lord? That's going to take me away from my service. But I may feel, no, but I am right. No, what is the point whether I am right or wrong? doesn't matter, I don't want to waste my time in all this, I have to do service. I have to chant the holy names of the Lord, I have to serve the devotees, I have to do all those things. So, I may continually do the wrong things, like how we saw in Indra. But, if I am not tolerating being corrected, so there is a small story I want to say here. So this is a very, when I read this, I found it very, very inspiring. Tolerance for being corrected. Ashwatthama was being corrected by his shikha being cut off and the jewel coming out of his forehead. He was being corrected, but he could not tolerate that. Right? Because he could not tolerate that, he took it on his false ego. Another reaction came out. Now there is a small, when I was reading different pastimes on Srimad Bhagavatam, I was doing some research on the word tolerance and different things that Srila Prabhupada said. So I was searching on Vedabase. Then I happened to see one BTG article by a Mataji who serves the cows. She works in the Goshala. And she said that just by serving the cows, you know, so many, we come to the mode of goodness because we learn so many lessons from the cows. So one of the lessons she was sharing was that once, like, she did not tie the cow, she missed tying the cow properly. And the cow ran back towards the feeding area. And animals, they don't realize how much they are supposed to. That's what she said, that cow does not know. If they eat too much, they may die because of overeating. And I think that I heard this about, someone was telling about their dog also, that once they left a bag of cereal open in the house by mistake, and the dog kept eating. You could see his stomach bloated up, they had to take him to the doctor. Otherwise, he would have died. So the cow could not perceive how much he is eating. She kept eating. And this Mataji ran all the way from the place where they stay to the place where they were eating. And then she went with a stick. She felt, I felt very bad hitting the cow. But, you know, I have to do this seva to her so that she remains in good health. So then she kept nudging the cow. Come back. And the cow kept nodding her head. No, I don't want to come. Then she finally took a stick. She started hitting her on the leg. Cow does not listen. She started hitting her on her body, cow does not listen. Then she said, finally, you know, I prayed and then I had to hit her on the face. And she said, I felt very bad. It was my mistake. I did not tie the cow, but I committed the mistake. Now I'm hitting her also. It is my mistake, but what to do? I have to do this service. So then the cow, when the Mataji hit her on the face, the cow looked at her and then she saw her and then she immediately agreed to go back with her. And then she said, while we were going back, the cow was also like licking me very nicely, mooing nicely to me and like singing very sweetly to me. She had no grudge towards me. She had nothing. She was still very happy. She said when the next day I went to milk her, she very easily allowed me to milk her. And she was still licking me, caressing me, loving me. So she said, I learned such a big lesson over there. So many times if devotees are correcting me, you know, it's like, or some Krishna's creating some divine arrangements, like the stick on different parts of my body, I don't listen. Krishna hits me on my face, then I listen something. But I still have a lot of vengeance towards. She said, if a dog or a cat would have been there, they would have not behaved properly with me for 2-3 days. They would have like shown that they're unhappy with me. But the cow is so simple. She's mooing, she's sweet, she's giving nice milk also. Like everything is going on. So she said, this is the tolerance for being corrected. So when we are corrected, if we can tolerate it, if the spiritual master is correcting us, if Krishna is correcting us, devotee is correcting us, we are going to grow and we will still have, if we can tolerate it and moo nicely and smile nicely like the cow and still do our services like she's giving milk, we are going to give pleasure to the devotees. So our goal is achieved. Our goal will not be achieved if we behave like a cat or the dog. So I found that very, very sweet story. I thought I'll share it with you. So here, if Ashwatthama could have tolerated being corrected, then he would not commit another offense, right? That would have protected him from committing this further offense of releasing Brahmastras and, you know, trying to show I'm powerful. What powerful? Your horses got tired. What could you do at that time? So he also lacked the gratitude, right? He killed the sons in the sleep. The war was over. He killed. And he deserved to be killed in response. But the Pandavas did not kill him for such a heinous offense. They just disgraced him and left him because they have to do something. They are Kshatriyas. They have to do something in return. And he was also respected by the Pandavas and Draupadis as a Brahman. But does he have gratitude for that? No, he is thinking, why did they do this to me? I better do something back. No, so that again, gratitude protects us from committing offenses. And in the absence of tolerance, there is material bewilderment that causes us to entangle ourselves. Like, again, I mean, with due respect to Lord Indra, I mean, this is just a pastime, but just like we heard in the story of Lord Indra. So, if that tolerance is there and if we situate ourselves that I am just a servant, you know, all these things and offenses, so-called offenses that are happening to me are just happening to me, to each of my material designations. Like today, suppose if my brother, I mean my brother and I have a very different type of relationship, we are very direct with each other. So today if he says something to me and if I get offended, I'm his sister, how can he say this to me? That's a material designation that is wanting that respect. And in so many other things, I am so-and-so devotee, I do so-and-so services. How can this new person tell me this? No, it's again a material designation. If I am just an eternal servant of the Lord, and if that is the only designation that I carry, nothing is going to offend me, nothing is going to affect me. I will be able to tolerate everything and I will still continue doing service because I will satisfy what comes with that designation of being a servant of the Lord. No amount of offenses, no amount of difficulties, no amount of power from anyone can take that from me because Krishna, I am yours, I am your eternal servant and this and you are mine, which means this relationship is mine. Nobody can take that away. So why should I worry about everything else? I'm saying this for my purification so that I can follow. Please help me follow that. And so we learned some lessons from Ashwatthama and how the Lord is protecting his devotees and he's there in such a personal way with everyone else, with all his devotees. And now, very difficult part for me to start Kunti Devi's prayers. I have no realization. I am just going to go through the verses. Madhav Chandra Prabhu has covered them very, very nicely. I'm just going to go through the verses. I've picked up the verses and I've picked up the explanations from Burijan Prabhu's book, Unveiling His Lotus Feet. So now, Krishna was leaving, Uttara comes to him and then she begs for his protection, Krishna protects. Now again he's going to his chariot, meeting everyone, saying, taking his leave from other people and other women and everyone, and then he's going. And then Kunti Devi, her heart, she has so much love and so much attraction and so much she wants to be with Krishna, so much attachment, that she is not able to come to terms with the fact that Krishna, who had been with them in so many years and so many different things, was always with them, is now leaving them. Right? It's like suppose we get attached to some devotees when they leave, we feel something. So imagine what Kunti Devi is feeling for the Lord when she is in full realization of who the Lord is. So, thus saved from the radiation of the Brahmastra, Kunti, the chaste devotee of the Lord and her five sons and Draupadi, addressed Lord Krishna as he started for home. So, definition of a chaste devotee is one who does not look anywhere else for shelter. No other living entity or any demigod, even for deliverance from danger. Such a chaste devotee also never asks the Lord for help, but the Lord out of his own accord is always anxious to render it. Krishna takes care of the devotees because devotees are so busy doing service, they forget to take care of themselves. So then she's saying, you are existing within everything and without everything. You're invisible to everything and are unaffected by material qualities. So then she's like, you're such a great personality, but why people cannot understand you? You're the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then she says that the deluding energy covers the eyes of the conditioned souls exactly like how we cannot perceive an actor who is in disguise. We don't know who he is. Similarly, the Lord is covered, not because he has disguised himself, but because we are covered. There's a deluding energy curtain in front of us. We have a cataract in our eyes, we cannot see. We have to do surgery of the Bhakti Yoga to remove the cataract so that we can perceive the Lord and understand the Lord and feel the Lord in different situations in our life. Feel the Lord's presence through the different devotees in our life. Like that. And then she says in the next verse is that you yourself descend to propagate the transcendental science of devotional service to the hearts of the advanced transcendentalists and mental speculators. So advanced transcendentalists, mental speculators, all intellectual, who are purified by being able to discriminate between matter and spirit. And how then can we simple people like women know you perfectly? And then she teaches, so basically here she's teaching us the proper humility by which we must approach the Lord. We must feel the humility, our false shelters, our false abilities. Abilities are true because they are coming from Krishna and must be used in His service. But those things cannot be our shelter because they are not ours. They are coming from Krishna. They are insufficient to comprehend the Lord. It's impossible. We cannot comprehend by our material senses and our material abilities. Only by sincerity of purpose, which comes with humility, can we perceive the Lord. So, here she says, maybe it's the next verse. Okay, yeah. So Jiva Goswami says that the Lord Krishna comes to the world so that embodied souls may learn to fix their thoughts on His lotus feet. because all the pastimes will happen, we will be able to see the wonderful, wonderful qualities of the Lord, able to remember, able to glorify, and sometimes our intelligence may not be able to comprehend, and we may be like, oh, what's happening? It'll be so much, you know. So to be able to learn how, so by that we will be able to learn how to fix our minds to the lotus feet of the Lord by learning from all of these different devotees, and then taste the happiness of pure devotional service. That so Vyasadeva is seeing us struggle, and he wants us to see what the pastimes are happening up, as we saw in that diagram. Now in the next prayer, she's saying, how can simple women know you? How can very simple minded people who don't have so much mental faculties, who are not such advanced mental speculators, know you? So then she states a prayer of Krishna in relationship to his devotees. And this is a very important lesson for us, and therefore she offers hope. So here she's saying, I offer respectful obeisances to you, and I offer you because you become the son of Vasudeva, and then you are the pleasure of Devaki, the boy of Nanda and other cowherd men of Vrindavan, and the enlivener of the cows and the senses, Govinda. So Krishna's devotees are most dear to him. So here, even these different devotees in Vrindavan are very simple. You don't see them going into the different Vedanta sutras. You don't see them going into all the speculation and advanced, you know, all these things. They just love Krishna. Krishna is ours. We are his, you know, we want to serve him. That's all they are doing. So she's saying that just if we have a relationship with Krishna, even we simple people, women, can, you know, have that feeling, you know, that transcendental science, and then feel that closeness with Krishna. So, no material strength, opulence, beauty, wealth, power, and mental intelligence faculties are needed. It's just that sweetness of that relationship and offering of devotional service to the Lord is needed. So, and also the most intimate, so Krishna's devotees are most dear to him, and Bhujan Prabhu says his most intimate names are the ones that are in relationship with the devotees. You know, so it is Nanda Suta, you know, those type of names are there. And when he hears those names, he remembers those devotees and becomes very, very pleased. So, and then in the next verse, she compares the Lord to a lotus. I don't remember, but it's all like Pankaj. Jangra, right? So that's when I understood Pankajangri Prabhu's name from this verse. So she's comparing the Lord to a lotus. And then she's saying that just as a waxy coating on a lotus leaf protects it from the water in which it sits, similarly the Lord is not truly of this world. And he still protects the lives of your devotees. So just like the wax is untouched by the water, similarly, he is also not of this world, but he protects the devotees, the Pandavas, again and again and again. So, what is blocking me from taking shelter of the Lord? My false ego. So, Kunti Devi is now afraid that Krishna will leave them with Yudhishthira, because Yudhishthira is securely in power, everything is working on fine, no calamities are there, enemies are all like small, small, chota, chota. Now, Krishna will feel, okay, I need to go somewhere else. And then, you know, then she says that, you know, so the next prayer that she says, she's illuminating a relationship, that it is not that God is just a protector from, he's a remover of devotees' dangers. And she points to a higher realization that when that prayer comes that, you know, give me more calamities, it is like the higher realization here is that, no, I don't want you just to protect me from different dangers. You know, again, we don't want to see you as an order supplier. What you're doing is, you know, like we need you for that also, but that is not the only thing. A devotee, the aspiration is not that let me have God in my life to be free from anxiety, to be free from difficulty. Okay, if I do devotional service, all my sinful reactions will be vanquished, I will have a happy and peaceful life to do dharma, artha, kama, moksha. No, that's not our goal here. The goal is, even if there are anxieties, it's okay as long as I have the association of the Lord. And anxieties, once in, I think the not the last Mayapur Yatra, but the Mayapur Yatra before that, Radhanath Maharaj was speaking about what is an auspicious situation. An auspicious situation is when we are able to remember the Lord. So any situation in which we are able to remember the Lord, and mostly we remember the Lord when we are in difficulty. So in that situation is very auspicious, because we are continuously like, no, I should chant, I should do my sadhana nicely, you know, I did not do before, that's why I'm not feeling strong, I need to take shelter of Bhagavatam, I need to take shelter of devotees. We are constantly thinking about the Lord, so isn't it very auspicious? And then in one lecture I attended in Chopati, I think last year, I think when the Gajendra's pastimes were going on, I think 1.5 years ago, September 2009, I was in Bombay. I was a fortune to be in Bombay, and Maharaj had one of the Sunday Bhagavatam classes, and I was over there. And Maharaj said, in the difficult situation, you just meditate on the Lord, and then suddenly you see you're a gopi in the spiritual world. All you have to do is just fix your mind on the Lord, and that's what you get for that. You know, Krishna's association, Krishna's service. So every trial is very, very auspicious. And Kunti Devi is not asking the Lord to stay here to protect them from difficulties, but she's asking him to stay here so that she can have his darshan all the time. And that's why she's inviting calamities, because she knows that when there is calamity, the Lord will come to protect me, I will have his darshan. So that's a very, very high realization. I cannot say that for myself, but it's something to learn from, to have similar desire.
Maybe so that's supposed to be than in the last point.
Which one, Prabhu?
The second sentence. That she eliminate, is that what you're trying to say? Than?
With Krishna, than. Yeah, I think it should be than. Thank you.
That's what you meant.
Yes, okay, there are a lot of typos here. Sorry, bro. So, we already read that. Like, so then comes her praise. I wish that all... Does anyone know the shloka? I mean, I don't know. That's why I'm asking. If someone can chant, it will be nice.
What is it? Which shloka?
25. Oh, we have the... You can chant the shloka. Yes, you can chant loudly. Okay, you can. I think one of you can just chant loudly so that everyone can hear.
Vipada santu tasashvat. Tatra tatra jagadguru.
Tatra tatra jagadguru.
Bhavato darshanam yatsyat.
Bhavato darshanam yatsyat.
Apunarbhava darshanam.
Apunarbhava darshanam. So I wish that all those calamities would happen again and again, so that we could see you again and again. For seeing you means that we will no longer see repeated births and deaths. So calamities are auspicious because they are an opportunity to remember the Lord. And this Srila Prabhupada's purport is very beautiful. The duty of the sane person, therefore, is to be undisturbed by worldly calamities. So if we are situated in that constitutional position of servant of the servant of the servant, we don't become disturbed by the worldly calamities, which are sure to happen in all circumstances. They're sure to happen. Material world. Dukhalayam ashashvatam. Anityam asukham lokam. Suffering all sorts of unavoidable misfortunes. So we should just keep tolerating. One should make progress in spiritual realization, because that is the mission of human life. So one may also say that difficulties come so that we can make advancement. If someone is lucky enough to get in contact with the Lord by devotional service, it is all gain. Contact with the Lord by any of the 9 devotional services is always a forward step on the path going back to Godhead. So in that difficulty, Prabhupada is saying, if someone is lucky enough to get in contact with the Lord by devotional service, it is all gain. And when can we see that? When we situate ourselves in the spiritual conception of life. Like His Holiness Ramapan Maharaj always speaks about spiritual conception of life. And if we are able to situate ourselves in the spiritual conception, those material difficulties will not affect us. They will not affect me, because I will think, okay, this is all anyway going to happen. Why should I waste my time? We are conditioned, we are tuned to get affected. We are tuned to feel hurt. We are tuned to be distressed. But because we are in the material conception, if I can move myself away from that, situate myself in the spiritual conception, it is all going to be gain, because every time I will feel, wow, you know, Krishna is cleaning up something little bit more from my heart. You know, there's something else left. He's like, sometimes, you know, when we are cleaning, we have to like, Prabhuji cleans the pots and he knows that, you know, the surface things come out just by spraying the water. Small, small problems, small, small difficulties remove some of our very simple, simple, not so deep-rooted anarthas. But to do deep cleaning, like even when you go to the dentist is doing deep cleaning. Initially, when they're cleaning, it's okay. We can deal with it. We feel we're strong, you know, we are like tolerant and everything. But sometimes when there is some deep cleaning has to happen, there has to be some pain. And we are like, why are you doing this to me? Give me an injection. Make it numb for me. But we have to go through that pain. Even if they make us numb, after that, we have to deal with the numbness and then the resultant pain that comes after that. So for deep cleaning, there has to be pain. No pain, no gain. So that's why when we are cleaning the pot also, sometimes we have to really rub hard. So Krishna in our difficult situations is rubbing hard sometimes. We may feel the pain, but he's rubbing. Everything is just, you know, just he's cleaning and it's going away. So I wish I can think like that. So please help me think like that when I come to you in my difficult situations. So it is all gain for us. And once, and another way to think about it is that when we are in a difficult situation, you know, we may think, oh, why is, you know, of course we are all devotees, we are not thinking, why is Krishna doing this to me, I am praying to him. We are not thinking like that in this room. But, you know, someone, like we may just, we can consider ourselves fortunate. And if we think about some people who don't have, or who right now don't have, but by the potency of all the Srila Prabhupada disciples, they will have in future the, you know, Krishna consciousness in their lives. If we consider ourselves in a difficult situation and consider them, at least we have Krishna. At least we have devotees. Or I should not say at least, we have Krishna, we have devotees, we have a way to live our life. We have, there's a meaning and a purpose to all of these things which we're able to comprehend, if not immediately, but after some time. You know, we are able to comprehend. So we are very, very fortunate in those situations. Difficulties everyone has to go through. But we are so fortunate because one thing is we know Krishna and the other thing is we are able to follow the principles in those situations with the help of all the devotees. Next two verses are focused on akinchana. So what she says is that it's like people only who are materially exhausted can approach the Lord. Tvam akinchana gocharam, tvam you. State of full dependence on Krishna wherein one values nothing in the material realm. Now, Bhujan Prabhu, in his book, he says there are two akinchanas. One person is like Gaura Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj. It's like, you can see he is akinchana. Another akinchana is Ramananda Rai, Yukta Vairagya. He has everything, but everything is for Jagannath. So, only people who are materially exhausted, either don't have it or don't want to have it, or if they have it, they are engaging it in the Lord's service, can approach the Lord. So again, that with that comes humility. So again, connecting it back to the previous verse, well, humility is what, and the sincerity of purpose will only get us to the Lord, not any of our material fallbacks. And then she says that the Lord, you know, I consider your Lordship to be eternal time, the supreme controller without beginning and end, the all-pervasive one. In distributing your mercy, you are equal to everyone. The dissensions happen only because of social intercourse. And your activities, although transcendental, appear human-like. How you are eternal and unborn and yet take birth among animals, sages, men and aquatics. This is bewildering. So now she's establishing that, you know, you are unborn, you are eternal time, there's no beginning, no end. You know, you are equal in your mercy to everyone. Everyone can get your mercy. And then she's telling that your activities, they appear human-like. Like, Lord is being born as a human. He's born as a, like, in the human form, he's coming on this planet. He's, you know, Avatari is coming on this planet. Then he's taking birth as a boar. He's taking birth as a fish. So many things. And, like, cannot fish. I mean, and then we worship those Shaligram Shilas. It's very bewildering. You know, but so what she's saying is that this is already so bewildering. You're, you know, coming to such a low position as a boar, you're taking birth like that. And then she says that, but even more bewildering than that is such a powerful person, the most powerful, absolute truth, supreme personality of Godhead, taking birth and becoming a plaything in the hands of the devotees, the Brajavasis. Like Mother Yashoda is trying to bind him, you know. We sing the Damodar Ashtakam prayers, you know, and then there's a description about how the Lord is breathing, how he is panting, how he is fearful, how the kajal is falling out from his eyes. So she's saying that this is so bewildering that you're fearing Mother Yashoda, even when fear personified is afraid of you. So inconceivable. And then she continues by describing Krishna's mysterious birth and activities by citing others' thoughts. And he is either, like some say he has appeared to increase the fame of the Yadus. Some say he has come in response to Vasudeva and Devaki's prayers. Some say he has come to vanquish the envious and the demoniac. And some say to enact wonderful pastimes that offer release to those suffering the pain of material life. You know, just by hearing the pastimes of the Lord, we get deliverance from the pangs of material existence and attraction to the Lord. So one thing is just to get delivered from, have an anxiety-free life, and the second thing is to have an attraction to the Lord. When we hear the Lord's interaction with his devotees, his sweet talks with the devotees, see his bhakta vatsal nature, we get attracted to him. And the qualification to see the Lord comes with devotional service practice. And Prabhupada says that therefore hearing is very important, because Kunti Devi is saying those who continuously hear, chant and repeat, your transcendental activities or take pleasure in others doing so, certainly see your lotus feet, which alone can stop the repetition of birth and death. So Shravana is very, very important. And then in the 10th canto, you know, the gopis, when they are separated from the Lord, he's, you know, they are chanting. This is, if someone knows this whole prayer, I just know the first line. Do you know, Prabhu? Tava kathamritam tapta jivanam. Mangalam Shrimadam. So the gopis, when they are separated from the Lord and they are singing the song of separation, then they are saying that the nectar of your words and the descriptions of your activities, the nectar of your words and the description of your activities are the life and soul of those suffering in the material world. So we are going to suffer. Let's change the focus from material conception to spiritual conception. We will get that life and soul and satisfaction and happiness and surrender by focusing on the descriptions of his activities and the nectar of his words. These narrations, transmitted by learned sages, eradicate one's sinful reactions and bestow good fortune upon whoever hears them. These narrations are broadcast all over the world and are filled with spiritual power. They are broadcast all over the world and are filled with spiritual power. Certainly those who spread the message of Godhead are most munificent. And I don't have to say anything here.
Mayavi, the most munificent Sanskrit word is Vrija.
So,
it is Vrija Prabhu.
I'm not qualified to speak on this. If someone wants to share something on this verse, we can share for a few minutes and then I can move on to the next slide. Prabhu, you'd like to share?
I was just saying it's appropriate word because it says Shravana Mangalam. We are talking about the important word Shravana.
Yes. That's what Prabhupada said. Shravana is very important because only with the hearing process, the devotional service develops very quickly. And then she's concluding now by expressing her fear. And her fear, she says that separation from you, oh my Lord, is like a thunderbolt. Now this is not emotion, just some emotion, some dialogue, some, like, I also know English, I can say such things, but there is a lot of feeling. There's a lot of feeling, there's a lot of depth in that feeling. And then she's expressing her fear, and then she's expressing her actual desire. And she says that her entire prayer is to persuade him to remain with them. And the sons, and she's also saying that, you know, I'm feeling the fear. We killed all the inimical kings, but now their sons and grandsons are there. They are going to cause harm to us. So she's expressing fear, you know, please be over here to protect us. And then she's also saying that, like Prabhupada is saying here, that it's not only the Pandavas who are put into the condition of enmity. All of us are in such a condition, right? Suffering means we feel someone is our enemy, they are doing something wrong to us. So we are always in that condition of enmity, and the best way of living is to become completely dependent upon the will of the Lord. Will of the Lord means whatever is happening is your mercy. If you so desire, I'll go through you, let it happen. I offer obeisances to you. And so that is, if we tolerate and focus on our service, we are liberated. And super, since she also says that we now possess the entire kingdom, but without the imprints of your lotus footprints on decorating our kingdom, this kingdom has as much value as a body after the soul's departure. Our kingdom flourishes only due to your continued merciful glances. So the opulence has no meaning if there is Krishna is not there, his blessings are not there, his footprints are not there. Now here she's talking about a body after the soul's departure. I was hearing some two or three lectures a few weeks ago, and somehow that whole week I heard two lectures, and both the lectures had the thing about how a fish, when she's out of water, she's flapping, and then she keeps flapping, and then after some time she goes away. So our bodies without devotional service are like such fishes which are flapping. There is no meaning. There is no meaning to that life. So the lotus footprints on our life is our service to spiritual master, Guru, Srila Prabhupada. Prabhuji, please. And the devotees, to continue that service. Then that body has some life. Then that body has some meaning. That vehicle has some meaning. I heard this by, I think in one, I was hearing Burijan Prabhu's class, he was playing a Srila Prabhupada lecture, and he was talking about this verse, Tava Kathamritam, and continuation of that. And in that he was saying that the gopis without Krishna in Vrindavan are feeling like that. So similarly, the merciful glances of Krishna in our life is our services to Him, our services to His devotees, and continuing in the path that Srila Prabhupada, in the process that Srila Prabhupada is giving us, and in helping furthering Lord Chaitanya's movement. So without that, our kingdom has no meaning, this body has no meaning. We may decorate the kingdom with the footprints of the Lord, with all the tilaks, but we have to do service in a mature way. And then she's concluding, like she's saying here, "Oh Lord, sever my tie of affection for my kinsmen, the Pandavas and the Vrishnis." So her partialities are troubling her mind. She's saying that Krishna has to be with us, but then she feels, "Oh, the Vrishnis will not get his association. Then Vrishnis will not get his protection." Then she says, "If the Vrishnis get it, then we don't get it." So she's like, "Okay, I don't want to have all these material attachments and afflictions." And then Prabhupada says that a pure devotee severs the ties of affection for his family and widens his activities of devotional service for all forgotten souls. If I remain in I, me and mine, I'll remain there and I will do devotional service. I'll please Krishna in my own small sweet way. But I may not be able to, one thing is that will also prevent me from experiencing full-blown devotional service. So I need to come out of that conception so that I can just serve completely with my heart. And if we do not break our ties to I, me and mine, my bodily designations and so many other conceptions and patterns of thinking, Krishna, out of his special affinity towards us, breaks the family affection by the force of circumstances, thus making us completely dependent on the Lord. All of us would have gone through some situation in our life where we would have realized, "Krishna, I get it, you're the controller. I got it now. But I got it temporarily, I know I'll forget, but I cannot ask for more calamities, but temporarily, I got it." So, O Lord of the Madhu, as the Ganges, now she's expressed her fear, she's expressed like her partiality and all those things, and now she's giving her actual desire. O Lord of the Madhu, as the Ganges forever flows to the sea without hindrance, let my attraction be constantly drawn unto you without being diverted to anyone else, not to my family, not to anything material, just completely to you and your service. So Srila Prabhupada says, Srimati Kunti, the conclusion of her prayers, wanted to serve the Lord without diversion, and that was her prayer. She wanted to serve the Lord without any diversion. This unalloyed devotion is the ultimate goal of life. Our attention is usually diverted to the service of something which is non-godly or not in the program of the Lord. When the program is changed into the service of the Lord, so we just have to switch it on, or we just have to tune it a little bit. That is to say, when the senses are purified in relation with the service of the Lord, it is called pure, unalloyed devotional service. Srimati Kunti Devi wanted that perfection, not for herself, but because she wanted to be she wanted to serve the Lord and prayed it from the Lord. So Prabhupada, I didn't put the whole purport here, but Prabhupada always also says that when he's talking about the program is changed to the service of the Lord. You know, we have lust, anger, greed, so many things. We have attraction to things and everything. Prabhupada is saying just switch it from the material conception, bring it to the spiritual conception. Bring it over. Your propensities cannot change, but just switch it over here. And then you can perform unalloyed devotional service. If you don't switch it, it will be alloyed devotional service. There will be some things happening here, some things happening over there. But just switch it, bring it to the spiritual conception. And that's what Srimati Kunti Devi is praying. She wants that perfection. And how many of us, these examples are there, these prayers in the Bhagavatam are there. Kunti Devi's prayers, Prahlad Maharaj's prayers, Dhruv Maharaj's prayers, Prachetas, Gajendra, Gopis, so many prayers are there. So that one thing is we learn how to pray. Second thing is we learn to get inspiration from them and what our mood should be. What is their mood and how far the gap is. So I found this inspiring for myself. And also that she's saying so many different reasons and she's expressing her heart out. But then her actual desire is, let my mind flow to thee just like the Ganges flows to the sea without any hindrance. Now the next section is Krishna accepts Kunti Devi's prayers and hears the distressed words of Yudhishthira Maharaj. So Krishna is her nephew. He's following the family obligation over there. So he just smiles and accepts and then he doesn't say anything. He does not take up his form as a Supreme Personality of Godhead, gives her blessings, says Tathastu, does not do that. He is like he's following the social custom of being her nephew. And then Krishna smiles and he accepts her glorification and statement of dependence. So the continuous thing that's happening in 7th and 8th chapter is this dependence on the Lord that we can learn from the Pandavas and the Lord's reciprocation to the devotees. Now, no one can make Lord Krishna stay at Hastinapur when he decided to start for Dwarka. Everyone, like this is Kunti Devi's we are seeing, but everyone was telling, don't go, please don't leave us, we will be lifeless without you. But the simple request of King Yudhishthir made the Lord remain there for a few days more. He just makes a simple request and that becomes immediately effective. Lord says, okay. So, this signifies that the power of King Yudhishthir was loving affection which the Lord could not deny. And I was just thinking about this. Lord is a person, we are people. Someone tries to control me, like to get my attention or to get my subordination. Someone tries to control me that, listen to me, you did not do this right. You listen to me. You did not do this right. Listen to me. What am I going to do? I'm going to, okay, Hare Krishna, and I'll be like, this is overwhelming for me, I need to go. But if someone is trying to lovingly, you know, reciprocate with me, understand me, talk to me, help me, encourage me, and also point out my faults, I will be more attached to such a person. So what is binding me? The love is binding me. The love is binding me. The control will not bind me. So Krishna is a person. He will be bound by the devotee's love. The more we show our dependence to Him, the more we show our love to Him, the more we show, you know, yatha tatha va vidhatu lampato mat prana nathas tusa eva napara. Like, whatever you do, Krishna, I am your servant. That is what is going to bind the Lord. That complete dependence that we have is going to bind the Lord. So Yudhishthir, I mean, not that Kunti Devi did not have that, but here it's happening by Yudhishthir's request. He is staying back because there is also a hidden reason that Yudhishthir expresses his anxiety over the war and the death of all the relatives, and you know, Krishna stays. And why Krishna stays? Because he wants to glorify Lord Bhishma Dev. Because he wants Yudhishthir Maharaj to go to Bhishma Dev and get his, you know, question to Bhishma Dev, and so that Bhishma Dev can be glorified as the Lord's devotee. So Vyasadev and other sages know Yudhishthir could not be pacified because they were aware that Krishna had a plan. So, because Krishna wanted Yudhishthir Maharaj to question Bhishma Dev, who was now close to death. So, this ends the 7th and 8th chapter. I'm sorry it took me 1.5 hours to do it, but I tried to go as fast. And my husband feels that these references are not enough. But this is the preparation. He said I should have prepared more, so I'm sorry if I was not able to share many things. I refer to the book by His Grace Burijan Prabhu, which all of us refer to, Unveiling His Lotus Feet. And then I heard from ISKCON Desiratory the Srimad Bhagavatam overview lectures. Like, he has lectures which combine sections together, and on each section there are verses. So I just heard those. Thank you very much, and thank you for your for giving me a chance to speak for my purification. And I sincerely want to mean what I'm saying, that I'm speaking for my purification. Please give me a blessing so that I can follow all that I've been speaking here. Hare Krishna.